Here in the upper Midwest, we certainly treasure the times of year that we can garden outdoors. But one of the realities we deal with is that for a variety of reasons, we do spend a lot of time indoors. So having a range of houseplants that are at their best in different seasons just makes good sense. Hi, I'm Judith Sears Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller today. Welcome to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tova Martin is the author of a dozen gardening books, including The Unexpected Houseplant, 220 Extraordinary Choices for Every Spot in Your Home. She's a horticulture industry veteran and a sought-after speaker. She joins us from her home in Connecticut. Tova, thanks for joining us again for Garden Talk. Hi, Tova.
Hello.
Hi. So good to have you with us again.
And I am so glad to be with you. Is it raining there? It's pouring here.
It's not raining, but we really haven't seen much of the sun in, it feels like, weeks. Maybe it hasn't been quite that long. But I don't know about Connecticut, but Wisconsin is having a very cool, wet spring, which is a huge contrast from last year's drought. We had, I think, a record number of 80-plus degree days in March last year, and I think we've only had a handful so far this year, and here we are in June, which has slowed down everything, outdoor gardening included, but you know, it gives us that much more time to work on those houseplants.
Well, absolutely, and you know, I always think of houseplants as sort of indoor-outdoor plants, because they can, you know, you can enjoy them indoors on totally rainy days like we're having today, and they're right by your side, and you're sort of focused closely on them because they are right at your elbow, and it's a different experience than the garden outdoors. And then also you can put them out on the porch and have them, you know, it sort of keeping you company outside also.
Well, and we'll talk about how to know which plants will enjoy being outside and which ones would rather just stay put where they are indoors. You divide your book, The Unexpected Houseplant, 220 Extraordinary Choices for Every Spot in Your Home, by seasons, which I think we expect in an outdoor gardening book, but not so much with houseplants. Why did you organize it that way, and what determines what season a houseplant falls under?
Well, you know, I mean, of course, they can be beautiful for you all year long. It seemed like an obvious way to divide it up. I wasn't initially going to do it, to tell you the truth, that way. But then I thought, well, people do want to know what they will be enjoying at certain times of the year, and they want to know what to expect. And so I decided to divide it up that way. But there are plants that flower at different times of year. Of course, there are plants that have great foliage all the time. But also, we do have this little interim period where we get to put things outdoors, and I wanted to talk about that, too.
And so let's talk about some of those good options, pretty common options that maybe a lot of listeners have of houseplants in their home that those plants would like to spend a little time outdoors.
Exactly. You know, I think it's very nice to have a plant outdoors. And rather than going out, think about it this, rather than going out to the nursery and buying something that would be, you know, smallish, you've grown your houseplant indoors for quite a while, and it's gotten sizable, we hope.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's making a kind of nice, large statement on your porch. And it's, you know, this goes way back. I have found historical photographs of people, you know, sort of posed on their porch, you know, really old photographs, people posed on their porch sitting next to their houseplants or outside sitting next to their houseplants. So it's a tradition that goes way, way back.
And so what types of houseplants are best suited spending some time outdoors in the summer?
You know, I take almost everything out, Judith. What I can't bear not to have plants in my home always. So I leave some of the succulents and cacti and succulent types of plants indoors because I don't want them to get soaked in rainstorms like we're having right now. I don't want them to get drenched. It wouldn't be killer if they did just for one day. But if we got, you know, sort of like the monsoon thing, I would think they could get a little bit too wet.
So because it would be so different than what their natural habitat would be, I'm guessing.
Yes, which would be, a very dry habitat. So, I bring almost everything outside. But what I do is I very carefully think about whether plants are going to be in the sun or in the shade.
And let's talk more about that. We're talking with Tova Martin. She is the author of a dozen gardening books, including The Unexpected Houseplant, 220 Extraordinary Choices for Every Spot in Your Home. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller, and we'd love to have you join the conversation by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also send us an email to talk@wpr.org, or you can post a question, comment, or a photo of a favorite houseplant on our Facebook page. That's The Larry Mueller Show. Do you usually put your houseplants outside for the summer or not? If you need some tips, Tova is happy to help. And if you have a favorite houseplant and wonder what kind of special care it might need or appreciate, I'm sure Tova would be happy to share that too. So I think that was an interesting point, Tova, that you were making, that putting plants outside doesn't necessarily mean putting them all outside in the same conditions, or in, you know, in some in the shade, some in the sun, depending on their needs, is probably the way to go.
It's true. Certain plants, it has a lot to do with where you have them situated in your home. Shade plants, let me think, aspidistras, ferns, begonias, the Patranthus all prefer to be in a shady spot, and they will burn in the sun. Even, you know, after they get acclimated, they will burn if you give them too much light. So put those underneath your shade tree, maybe on the, you know, the north, maybe not the north side, but the north corner of a building where it gets, you know, a little bit of east or west light, but it's shaded a lot of the time. So those are good options for those types of plants. Succulents, pelargoniums, that's geraniums. Let's see what else. I'm going to run over and look at and on my back porch here, which gets sun. My irisine, that's called the beefsteak plant. All those plants really prefer the prefer a sunny climate, so you can put those out in full sun. But the trick is doing it slowly.
And I think we're used to the idea of like hardening off our little seedlings if they're tomato plants or things like that. You know, if we start things from seed indoors, I think it's kind of common sense to know not to, you know, just take them out, put them in, you know, at the mercy of all the elements and expect them to do well. But we might not think of a mature plant that's moving from the indoors to the outdoors.
Well, you know, Judith, I made the mistake myself. This year, I put my succulents out on the porch thinking, you know, they're succulents. And cacti, they can take it. Well, they burned. Like, I had put them in the oven or something. They just, a couple of them, my aloes. You wouldn't think that aloes would burn, but my aloes just got crisped.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, and I think also even plants that like a sunny windowsill inside, that doesn't mean that they're going to be able to take full sun outside, at least not right away.
They will, they probably will eventually, but you do, now what I do is, say they're in a heavy pot and you don't want to do it twice, you know, move them around twice, just take some cheesecloth or even just, you know, a light sheet and drape it over them in the sun, when the sun is hitting them. And later in the day, you know, when the light levels get low, you can take it off and let them get acclimated. But, you know, it is amazing that even when you think you've got it in a south, sunny window, it's not the same as outdoors.
Is there a sense of kind of what percentage of the actual, even if it's in direct sunlight inside, that what percentage of the power of that sunlight the plants are getting versus outside?
know that, and actually, to tell you the truth, I try to get information on the new windows, you know, that have that are insulated, and they don't even have any information on that, exactly how much that, you know, that is cutting off the light. So I don't have any data on that, but you could probably go out there if you have an old light meter from a camera. And,
that's a good
and
idea.
See the difference.
Mm-hmm. And Tova, in your experience and your extensive experience with houseplants, and as you put it, sending them outdoors for the summer is kind of like shoving the kids outside for them to get some fresh air and exercise. What are some of the plants that just love being outside in the summer?
You know, almost everything does, but I find that it makes the difference for certain things. Like, for example, I grow calla lilies, which and it's much easier. They are actually poisonous to pets, so it's rather than putting them somewhere that's, you know, way out of the cat's reach, it's easier to grow them outside in the summer, and they just grow by leaps and bounds. They really, really do. They love it. My begonias just love the fresh air. You know, it's just amazing. Interestingly, the geraniums perform about as well indoors as outdoors. I find they bloom about as much indoors as they do outside, but they do tend to make a lot of new growth outdoors.
And does the growth that those plants experience outdoors, is that similar to the growth they have indoors, or is it more robust?
Outdoors, I would call it tighter. You know, it's not as loosey-goosey. It's not as not as much space between the leaves. And so it's kind of a tighter type of growth. And they really do respond to it. Plectranthus, there are a lot of wonderful houseplants that just love growing outside, and you can use them in mixed containers, or you can just group them together in a little vignette and then move it around as they bloom or don't bloom or your whim and fancy.
That sounds lovely. Would you like
really
to come and
fun.
Do that in my garden? Create a little tableau. We are talking with Tova Martin. She is the author of a dozen gardening books, including The Unexpected Houseplant, 220 Extraordinary Choices for Every Spot in Your Home. And we are talking especially about how to allow our houseplants to enjoy a little bit of the summer weather themselves and the best ways to do that. I'm Judith Sears Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller on Garden Talk. We'd love to have you join the conversation by calling 1-800-642-1234 or send us an email at talk@wpr.org. Coming up Monday at 11, Larry will be back, and he will be visiting with John Freiberger. Usually when John is on, it's about home improvement, but this time, John will be talking about his other passion, which is horse carriage pleasure driving. That should be a really fun show. I hope you'll tune in. Right now, it's Garden Talk, and we are talking with Tova Martin, who specializes in houseplants and keeping them happy and healthy. And Tova, I wanted to make sure we covered another aspect of plants being outdoors, which is wind. We talked about protecting them from the sun, but I'm guessing a lot of plants would be exposed to a lot stronger air circulation being outside than they might be used to. Is that something to be concerned about?
Yeah, you know, I didn't even think about that, but you're absolutely right. Wind can be a major, major issue, and, you know, I've actually once supplied some great big huge sward ferns to a place on Nantucket, and they just were whipped around by the. They were hanging baskets. They were going to hang on this porch, and it was it was a real problem. And if you've got something with broad leaves, now, for example, a friend of mine on my Facebook page was telling me that he grows the elephant's ears indoors and outside. Well, you really have to work, you know, a really strong gust can shred those, as can, the tender leaves, they can get shredded, ruined by hail and that sort of thing.
And so it seems like, keeping in mind what kind of force the wind might have on it, I mean, something that has very light leaves or thin leaves probably isn't going to notice that much, but you might want to protect something that would have that almost a sail effect if the wind hit it.
Exactly. Like the elephant's ear, that's a large, broad leaf, and it's probably exactly going to be like a sail, and it's going to pick up the wind. Now, another thing that you should really think about a lot is how top-heavy a plant is. If the foliage, the upper foliage, is heavy and weighty, you want to put it in a container that will give it ballast.
And what kind of ballast would you suggest?
I would say I'm a big proponent for clay pots.
Hmm.
And that gives, the weight, a lot of weight below. So think about when you're putting it in a clay pot, think about how the footprint is a heavy footprint, a large footprint. Don't put it in something that has, a tiny little, like a trying to balance a large person on a very small foot just doesn't work.
And Tova, one of the things that Larry often comments on when you're a guest on Garden Talk is that in your book, The Unexpected Houseplant, you have such lovely pots, and the pots themselves are a real centerpiece and really show off the gorgeous plants that you have in them. Where do you find the really unique and beautiful pots that you have? Because it's not just a bunch of little terracotta ones.
No, I collect all kinds of things. Judith, I'm looking out on my porch, and right now I have an old washer bin, and I'm using that as a planter. an old hand washer, the way they used to wash laundry. It's sitting on, I use ice chests. And often I'll put drainage in them. An ice chest has the drainage, usually. I use wash tubs that are a little bit rusty. I use almost everything.
It works. I mean, the photos are gorgeous, and it really, it's such a unique and interesting look that is, it doesn't take away from the plants, but it really adds to the interest.
Now, here's a little hint, Judith. Say you've got a container that you don't want to drill a hole in, and you've got and you want to put a plant in it, and you don't want to have to worry about the rain making it soggy and smelling like a swamp. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Well, just take and put, do it like you do a terrarium. Take and put about an inch of pebbles or an inch or 2 inches of pebbles on the bottom, mix that with some charcoal on the bottom, and it really helps that from, smelling swampy.
So the charcoal, well, first of all, the pebbles would help to keep the soil from being too waterlogged because the water would go down there, but then the charcoal is what you're using to control the odor, it sounds like.
Keeping the soil sweet.
Oh, wow.
Keeping it from getting what we call anaerobic and smelling like a swamp.
Well, I have to say the most creative I've gotten is using an old teapot, and that was moderately successful, but I'll have to branch out into some of those other planters. Well, Tova, we have some callers who'd like to join the conversation, so let's go first to Nick in Middleton. Hi, Nick.
Hello.
Hi.
I have a question about some orchids. I have a winter bloomer and a spring bloomer, and I was wondering, how do I clean the leaves, and when could I cut back either of them? Because my winter one is about 2 feet tall now.
All right, Tova.
Now these are orchids. Is it the flower stalk that's 2 feet tall?
Yeah.
Or is it just the stalk for the flower?
It's a stalk.
Yeah. Okay. Now what you probably would want to do, make sure it doesn't have any branches, because sometimes they will. I had one that I sort of waited a while, and it did make a side branch, which made more blossoms. So if there are no, if it hasn't branched at all, there's just that one branch, is it turning brown?
One of the branches did turn brown, but the other ones, it branched off, and now there's two of them.
Has the second one bloomed at all?
Yeah, it bloomed this year, and now it's dying off the winter.
Okay. If it's dying out, you're safe to take it off, take it down to the base. So you can prune it back that way. You were asking about cleaning the leaves. What I would do is I usually just, a wonderful thing is to put them outside a little bit and let the, you know, the rains do it. But, again, most orchids burn easily. So be sure it's in a lot of shade. And but if not, just take a tissue and wipe it off, just, you know, with a damp tissue, just kind of, you know, like your cleaning up a counter or something, just wipe it off.
I've been doing that, but it doesn't seem to get the hard water stains off, because I might be overwatering or something, because I kind of like to have water sitting inside the leaves. I don't know if that's a bad thing or not.
That's not, it's not on an orchid, not a great idea. So when you water mostly on the medium, the growing medium that you have it in.
And maybe using distilled water instead would cut back on the mineral deposits too?
Good idea, Judith.
We have very hard water in the Madison area, and Nick is just down the road in Middleton, so I'm guessing that he might be dealing with that as well. But I was going to ask, Tova, so orchids are something that can go outside, but with caution.
Exactly. You really want to be careful. They will burn in an hour. It's amazingly fast how they do get burn marks.
So in the shade or in very, very diffuse filtered sunlight?
Yeah, if you that you might even try a north side on that one, see if they how they do on the north side of a building. Or if you do have buildings shading at large buildings, that's good.
All right. Thanks for that call, Nick. And let's talk about some of the other needs of those plants that are spending some time outdoors. You know, you're having a lot of rain. We've been having a cool, wet spring. But usually in the summer, there are some pretty long, dry periods. And how do the watering needs of those plants change being outdoors instead of in?
Well, if they do need, I mean, if it's not raining, if Mother Nature isn't taking care of the situation, I find that they need water. You know, again, you need to monitor them. I never say every thus and so day, but check them every day. One thing that you might think about doing, Judith, is repotting them when you take them out if they are root bound. Check the root system. See if it's filled the container. This is an excellent time to do repotting. It really is. Not only is it easy because you can just set up shop outside, but you can, you know, most plants are making growth right now, and it's a good time to give them a graduation.
And so you said to check the roots, and, you know, most houseplants, I think if you took them out of their pot, you would see some roots, but when you're saying root bound, it looks like they're kind of straining at the seams, right?
You can really see a network of roots. It'll look like a white mesh in there. And when, you know, you can hardly see the soil, and you see more roots than soil, even if you see, you know, like half the soil is filled with roots, in other words, you can hardly see half the soil, it's time to give that plant a good promotion.
And so we talked about all the wonderful different containers that you use as pots. How do we know? I think the instinct is often, I'll put it in a nice big pot. It'll have plenty of room and I won't have to worry about it for years. But is it good to make that kind of a jump in the size of the pot?
That's a really good point, because that's where most people make their mistake. They think, I'll skip a few steps here, just as you mentioned. And it's really not a good idea to give them, you know, it's like walking around in shoes that are much too big. But with a plant, what happens is that there's no roots in that soil. The soil just gets waterlogged. You're watering it because it looks sort of dryish, and the roots eventually kind of get too much water. In other words, it's always soggy for them.
So just kind of eyeballing a potential new pot for a plant, do you want something that's only about a quarter bigger or 50% bigger? Or how do you decide what the right size is for that graduation, as you said?
I do it by inches. I do an extra, I usually give a plant an extra 2 inches.
And that's diameter?
Yes.
Okay. So if it's in a 4-inch pot, go up to a 6 or a 6 up to
yeah.
an 8. But that's not a huge difference, especially as you get into the bigger pots. So really, like you said, you don't want them to get the plant equivalent of blisters on their heels from having shoes that are too big. What would happen? I mean, would a plant, what would happen if a plant gets put into a too large pot?
The roots, because you're watering soil that doesn't have any roots kind of sipping up the water, the soil stays moist, and the roots are constantly getting waterlogged, and they actually amazingly they don't get enough oxygen and they suffocate.
Mm.
They literally drown.
Wow. So just one step up is plenty. And speaking of repotting and the soil itself, what are the different types of soil for houseplants or soilless mixes that are available? How do we know which one is right for our plant?
Yeah, that's the key to growing houseplants, really, is to get a good soil. And what you want to do is test that soil out. Take the soil in your fist, first moisten it slightly. Not a whole lot, but just moisten it slightly. Take it in your fist and make a fist, grab it into a fist, and then open that fist up and see if it falls together. You know, don't squish it too much, but lightly make it into a ball, and then see if the ball falls apart when you open your hand up. And that's good soil. That soil has got is not going to be, like, mucky. That will work well for your houseplants. And you always want to buy a potting soil. Don't just go and dig up whatever you can find in your backyard. Go out and buy a potting soil for your plants.
Because that way you can avoid pathogens and pests, I'm assuming, things like that, and get a good healthy mix.
Exactly. You get the right consistency, and you don't get all the little problems. Not that, you know, earthworms sometimes do get in pots. And that's another good point is that it doesn't hurt to take and lift your plants up from a patio or especially if you're putting them on brick, a patio or anything, even the soil, lift them up with little plant feet.
Oh, so they're not in direct contact with whatever surface they're sitting
right.
on.
Right. And the drainage hole was opened, in other words.
Great. We're talking with Tova Martin. She is a horticulture expert and the author of The Unexpected Houseplant, 220 Extraordinary Choices for Every Spot in Your Home. And it's a really fascinating book and a gorgeous book to look at. Some of you may have picked it up as a pledge premium a couple pledge drives ago. We had Tova on and offered the book as a thank you gift. And we would love to have you join the conversation. You can call 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or go to our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. And Tova, we had an email, actually. Todd from Woodruff is a water specialist, and he says the reason you don't want to use distilled water to water your plants is because it's deprived of minerals and can be aggressive on the plants. It'll absorb or leach out the minerals from the plants, and so he recommends always using mineral-rich water to water your plants. And I think I may have misspoken, and I think it's good to use distilled water for misting, but maybe not for watering.
Well, I don't do a whole lot of misting on my plants anyway. I don't find that it really helps the humidity. It's more, but I think what you were getting at were the salts that mm-hmm. build up, et cetera. I think that's, and Todd is giving us this, that's wonderful advice, and I had not realize I've never actually needed to work with distilled water, so it's good Good advice. Thank you, Todd.
It's always great when listeners can help out other listeners and the host and the guest. So let's go back to the phones and Annie in Dalton. Hi, Annie.
Hello. I have actually a couple of questions. The first one is I have a couple of pothos vines. One's I got 5 years ago, and another one has been considerably longer than that. And they always drop leaves towards the pot end of the vine. Is that normal? And do I, you know, after all these years, they're getting quite bare on one end. Do I just clip them off and root them and start that over in the pot? Or is there some way to revive them with fertilizer or something?
All right. Tova, what do you think?
I think that one thing you could do, I mean, that it's definitely a problem, and you can wind them sort of around. I think your idea of clipping them off and putting them, letting them root in the container is a very good idea. That's a great solution. And many vines are this way. I haven't worked that much with pothos, so I'm not sure how well they branch. But clipping them definitely, you know, doesn't hurt. I often wind them around, you know, plants like that around like a bird's nest.
Hmm. And so you get some of that fullness, too.
Yes, exactly. And so it isn't just, you know, like bedraggled hair or something.
And Annie, did you have another question along with that?
Yeah, one more. I have a couple of weeping figs. They're trying really hard to walk out of their pots. I have a tiny house, so I don't have a lot of room for great big spacious pots. How do you keep those guys small, or can't you do that? And maybe I should find them a new home.
Do you mean the creeping fig, the one that creeps around?
No, these they look like the little trees. You see them in malls and things a lot.
Okay. Okay. And you find that they're sort of tipping over, is that it?
No, they're growing straight up, but I noticed, I mean, I've had these probably 15, 20 years, so I've had them for a long time.
Wow. And they've got your money's worth.
Yes, I did. And they, you know, they slowly crowd their pot, and I've slowly gotten larger pots, but I'm to the point where I really don't want to try lugging pounds and pounds of dirt and tree around. They sit outside, and they just go gangbusters outside under the porch. But is there a way to keep them, those little miniaturized trees or whatever, try to keep them from outgrowing yet into a bigger pot, or do I just give up and give them away? The leaves, I think, are coming on smaller than they used to, so I think the plant is stressed.
Well, one solution is to root prune. Root pruning can be a little bit dicey because you want to be sure that you're not supporting a whole canopy of foliage by less roots. So a lot of people prune the top as they're pruning the roots. But, you know, if it's the difference between throwing the plant out and not throwing it out, keeping it, you can definitely, you know, try root pruning so you take back around 2 inches of root. And then you would give it new soil, and in other words, you keep it in the same container, give it new soil, and then root and prune the top to go with it. Take back about a third of the growth. But you know, there's nothing wrong with keeping a plant in the same container. You can keep fertilizing it, and you know, as long as it doesn't really begin to suffer. Again, the difference between throwing it out and starting again with something that needs to wait 15 years to look like your old one, you know, you might try just keeping it in the same container and giving a little bit more food.
Because basically keeping it in the same container will probably slow down the growth, too.
Yes.
And thanks for that call, Annie. And Annie brought up whether she should be fertilizing the pothos that's not doing very well. Is this a good time of year? You said it's a great time of year to repot, Tova. Is it a good time of year to fertilize, too?
It is. If you haven't fertilized all winter, you might start gradually. In other words, your first fertilization, you might not give quite as much as the dosage that's recommended. But, you know, then you can build it up. I always follow the you know, be careful to follow the directions. It's not one of these, you know, like more is better type things. So follow directions on the packages for fertilization, because plants can get fertilizer toxicity.
And I know that you prefer to use organic fertilizers, which I think a lot of our listeners are interested in as well. What are some types that you recommend, and how do you use them?
I use a fish emulsion type, you know, any type of fish food, and there are many brands out there, and they're all equally wonderful. One thing I got to warn, which isn't so much of an issue outside, but that they do smell slightly, even though many of them say they are odorless. My cat is, you know, he can always tell when I'm fertilizing. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't do anything about it. He just perks up his little nose and looks pretty interested. But they do have a slight, you know, a slight fish smell. That said, it goes away in just a matter of hours, really.
Larry has recommended in the past, I know, he has a bear's lime tree that lives indoors most of the time, but also really enjoys going outside in the warmer weather, and they use fish emulsion on it. And he figured out that if they put the fish emulsion on right before they leave the house for the day, that's perfect timing, because it's dissipated by the time they get home.
That's a really good idea. It's true that if you, you know, fertilize, then go to work.
Exactly. Let the fertilizer go to work and you go to work, too.
Yeah.
Well, we are talking with Tova Martin. She is a horticulture industry veteran and the author of many gardening books, including The Unexpected Houseplant. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. This is Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking about the care of our houseplants and which houseplants enjoy spending some time outdoors in warmer weather. Our guest is Tova Martin, and she is the author of The Unexpected Houseplant. And Tova, let's go back to the phones and Chris in Milwaukee. Hi, Chris.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was calling in regards to this. I have a peace lily, and I've had it for about 2 years. And it's growing pretty well. However, it's lopsided. One side of the plant is larger than, I wouldn't say significantly, but it's noticeably larger than the other side of the plant. And I'm wondering if the larger side is taking all of the nutrients from the smaller side.
But it's a single plant, right, Chris?
Yes.
Okay. Tova, what do you think?
Well, I think Chris is experiencing what I call the Leaning Tower of Pisa syndrome. Plants that are, you know, that you're facing light on one side often begin to lean, you know, toward that side. It's sort of a nature's way of moving toward the light, and plants are perfectly capable of that. They've been adapted to do that. But so a good suggestion is even when you have it indoors, to keep rotating your plants so they get balanced light on all sides. So I don't think that, you know, I mean, now that said, now that you've got a plant that's already lopsided, what do you do about it? You can, a good solution would be to put it outside, and even though the other side is not, you know, the most photogenic side, it's the plant's best side, as we would say, you might want to face it, you know, face it a little bit more toward the light. Even though the spathiphyllum, the peace lily, is a low light plant, it does, you know, it's probably reacting to light.
And Chris, did you have a question about another plant as well?
Oh, thank you. Yes, I do. I have an Algamedia. This Algamedia, I've had it for about 4 years. It's grown to be really, really big. It's in a 14-inch plastic pot. Okay, and I have two issues going on. I know I'm going to have to repot it, but I wanted, you know, but it's so big, I don't want to destroy the roots. So I wanted some advice about that. Also, with this Algamedia, some of the leaves are brown at the tips or brown on the sides of the leaves. And I'm wondering, do I take those leaves off, or do I take those leaves off? And if I do take those leaves off, do I cut the branch of the plant down so that it's even? How do I remedy that, or should I just leave it alone? Is it just no big deal?
Okay. And Tova, what kind of plant is that?
I think she does she mean the aglaonema? Okay. It's a plant that it's a very wonderful low maintenance plant, and they're coming out with the best colors on that. They're really doing some wonderful hybridizing on those and coming out with some very exciting leaves on them beyond the old kind of gray ones. There's ones with red streaks and spots and all kinds of wonderful things happening. But Chris asked about taking the brown leaves off or wondering what to do about. Now, first of all, sometimes leaves that are browned at the tips, it's tricky because it's a symptom of either under or overwatering, usually overwatering. It can be underwatering, too. If it's just the tiny little point, then often I do just snip that off. But if you're getting brown spots or brown edges or anything like that, I would say that if a leaf looks doesn't look good, then just take it off. Take the entire leaf off. I mean, why not? It's never going to look any better. So what you want to do is take the whole leaf stem, you know, the stem that's going to that leaf, take it down to the base on that. No point in leaving that stem, the leaf stem. The aglaonema comes from the base, so just snip that off. And you'll see it'll look a whole lot tidier on that.
And she was also worried about damaging the roots and repotting. Is that a concern?
No, she can repot. The roots shouldn't be damaged. As long as you you can rough up those roots quite a bit. We do it when we're potting outside, and it's a good idea to free the roots a little bit from, because they've been used to going around and around and around and around. You want them to go into the new soil, so rough them up a little bit when you're repotting the plant.
So instead of worrying about hurting them, maybe give them a little rougher treatment than you would think that they would appreciate. But that makes sense, because when you're planting little vegetable seedlings, for instance, it's good to break up that clump of roots so they'll actually spread out and take advantage of being in the ground, too.
Right. Roots can take quite a bit. I mean, of course, you don't want to smash them if you don't need to or anything like that. But I think we're a little bit too ginger with our root system.
Well, on the Facebook page, Lynn posted an amazing photo. She put, "My monster aloe vera plant. I'd like to repot this, but I have no idea how to do it without killing the plant." And there's a reason she's calling it a monster plant. It's huge and beautiful. But aloes can be a little tricky, can't they? They seem to kind of fall apart if you're not careful.
You're right. They are large plants. They are easily. I mean, there's nothing wrong with taking the pups off. Actually, nothing wrong with that at all. But and it's a way to kind of hold the line on how large the container will be. Is take some of those pups off, and I bet she's got a lot of friends that would love an aloe.
It's really a beautiful aloe. I hope people will go to the Facebook page, that's The Larry Mueller Show, and take a look at that. Let's go next to Janet in Madison. Hi, Janet.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I have a problem. I have about an 8-year-old mission fig tree that I love, and most of the year it's inside. Once in a while I put it outside. But I have replanted it about 2 years ago. It still seems to be okay, but I have a chronic problem with mites when it's indoors, spider mites and webs and whatnot. And because it does produce fruit, and we enjoy that, I don't want to use anything systemic or too harmful. I'm just wondering if there's you know, any advice as far as what to use to try to get rid of the mites or keep them under control, or just to basically get the plant healthier.
Great. Thanks for that call, Janet. Tova, what do you think?
Well, Janet's picked a plant that's a problem that's very easily solved organically, and that is red spider mite. You can just take and give it a shot of cold, wet water. Take that hose, and the red spider mites hate it. They absolutely hate it, and they abscond. They go to, I don't know where they go, but they leave, and they leave her plant alone. And that's another good reason. If you're having a cold, wet spring, take advantage of it. let the Mother Nature do some of the insect control.
So a cold shower is not something that the red spider mites enjoy.
No, they do not.
Well, that sounds good, Janet, and let us know how that works for you. Let's go next to Connie in Portage. Hi, Connie.
Hi. I have a bonsai tree that I've had for a couple years, and it just stays the same. And I don't know if I should do something for it, fertilize it, or where I would even get fertilizer for a bonsai. All I do is water it, and it just seems like that's not enough.
Well, a lot of the bonsais are meant to stay in kind of a holding pattern. The plants they use for bonsai, they don't put a lot of fertilizer on them because they don't want them to make rampant growth, because they want that, you know, they want everything tight and poetic and graceful and part of the zen of bonsaiing is working with that. But if you feel as though you want a little more action, then it's your plant. Go out there and give it a little bit of fertilizer. Usually the roots are not in very large pots, so you might dilute it a little bit more than normal. Give it a little. There's nothing wrong with diluting a little more. It's you don't want to make anything stronger, but do it. Diluting more is not an issue. So maybe, you know, just give it a little nudge.
And so that fertilizer, it sounded like Connie was expecting that she needed a particular specific kind of fertilizer for her bonsai plant. But Tova, it sounds like you're saying that any kind of general purpose fertilizer would be okay.
There's not a special bonsai fertilizer that I know of.
All right. And Cornelia wrote on the Facebook page, have you ever heard of Ceramis? It's a growing system I used in Germany and even had it shipped over. They are clay granules and matching plant food. You take the plant with the root ball and soil intact and place it in the center of the pot to make sure there is Ceramis on the bottom, and then fill it up with the rest of the Ceramis, stick in a water measuring stick into the root ball, and water with plant food only when the stick turns red, no more over or under watering.
Well, that's an interest. I have seen it's fascinating. It really is. I have never heard of that particular system, no. And this is why I love Wisconsin Public Radio, because your listeners are always teaching me things that I didn't know about. But it sounds like a wonderful system. The clay granules, it sounds like she's, you know, taking care of everything all at once.
And you said that we tend to overwater more than underwater. Is there a basic rule of thumb for how much an indoor plant needs water-wise?
Every plant is different. For example, Lynn's wonderful aloe would need different watering, and one of the reasons why she is able to host this immense plant is because this particular plant doesn't need that much water. It's a succulent, which means that the foliage is filled with water, and it's really adapted to low water system. Whereas other plants, for example, the fig that Annie was talking about would need a little bit more water. You know, you have to give it a little more water.
So know your plant and know its needs and then keep track of when you're watering it. That's the hardest part for me. I can never remember when I did it. Clint posted on the Facebook page more information about water and distilled water. He wrote, rainwater is distilled water because distillation is a process of evaporation, then condensation, and finally collection or precipitation in the case of rainwater. He says, although rain can gather some pollutants on its way back down to the surface, making it a little less pure, it's also another good option. And we have been talking with Tova Martin. She's the author of The Unexpected Houseplant here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller, and happy to have you with us. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller today, and I want to let you know that there's a great opportunity this afternoon to join us after 3 today for the first pilot episode of Central Time, our new afternoon show co-hosted by Rob Ferret and Veronica Rickert. Central Time covers news, culture, and ideas, both big and small. Join us today at 3, and then tell us what you think. Your input will really help to shape the show. You can find them on Facebook at Central Time on WPR, and you can also follow them on Twitter at Central Time WPR. I hope you'll do that, and I hope you'll enjoy our conversation right now with Tova Martin. As you know, Friday means Garden Talk, and today we're turning our attention to the plants that share our homes and other indoor spaces. Tova is the author of a dozen gardening books, including The Unexpected Houseplant, 220 Extraordinary Choices for Every Spot in Your Home. She's a horticulture industry veteran and a sought-after speaker, and she joins us from her home in Connecticut. Tova, it's always great to have you with us on Garden Talk.
Thank you so much. I'm having so much fun myself.
Well, and let's invite our listeners to join in as callers at 1-800-642-1234 if you have a question about a houseplant you have or are thinking of acquiring, and whether it's one that might like spending some time outdoors or not. Tova is happy to help you care for those plants the best way possible. Again, 800-642-1234. You can also send an email to talk@wpr.org. And we had a caller who couldn't stay on the line. Joe from Prairie du Chien is going to be moving, and he has houseplants that will be sitting in a moving truck for 2 to 3 days. And he's wondering what, if anything, he can do to help those plants make it through that move alive and healthy.
Well, what he should really do is either tell the driver or him do himself is park in the shade. It's so fast how quickly plants can get baked in a closed compartment. So always, and you should all think about that when you're going out buying any type of plant. Don't put it in your trunk and then park in the sun, because that can be a killer for plants.
And I wonder too if Joe is driving himself, if he puts the plants in last, maybe if they're staying over somewhere, he could even, depending on how big they are, of course, and how many there are, maybe he could even bring them into the motel or the camping ground or wherever it is that they're staying for the night.
Or when he's having his lunch, if he's picnicking and he can't park in the shade, just open up the back of the truck if he can see into it and make sure, you know, it's secure, then just open it up. Give it, those plants a little bit of ventilation can make all the difference. Another thing that some people don't realize when they're packing pots is that in a compartment is that they really do, you know, they're tall, usually tall containers, and they can fall over easily. So kind of pack them tightly together. And again, that can be a little bit of a problem for the heat as well.
And we also had an email from Tammy. She says, I work in a building with very few windows, and there are none near me. There aren't many overhead lights on either. I do have some lights I can turn on in my cubicle, and there is one okay light over me. Is there any sort of plant that will work well in this dimly lit environment?
That sounds like it is pretty dimly lit. she can try, you know, some of the real cast iron plants, the most famous being like the Aspidistra, seems to soldier on through very, very low light. So that's a possibility. And ivies, some of the ivies can tolerate quite a bit of low light. I mean, it's worth a try, isn't it, to get some green into your environment to you know, just experiment with some of these very, very, very low light plants. Creeping fig, the ficus pumila, it's called. The creeping fig is a very, very low light plant and can tolerate that. I actually had an ivy in very low light conditions, and it was, you know, a little bit straggly. But what I did was I just like I told Annie to creep around, take the pathos and wind it around. Just wind it around a little bit more.
And let's go back to the phones. And Jill in Grafton is up first. Hi, Jill.
Hi.
Hi.
I am a transplanted southerner. And I was in the garden center this winter, and I saw a gardenia bush, and it was flowering. It smelled so good. And I purchased it, brought it home, put it in a sunny window, and it was really pretty and blooming and fragrant for about a month. And then all the flowers fell off, and they'd never come back.
What do you think, Tova?
Someday I'm going to write a book called Gardenias I Have Killed.
Will it be a long book, Tova?
Because I did begin to give up on it pretty quick. But gardenias are rather hard houseplants, and I'll tell you why. It's because everything they love is kind of the opposite of what we have in the average home. They really, really need a lot of light to blossom well. So they're difficult unless you have a greenhouse. They like high humidity, but they also like warm, warm temperatures. And when you start jacking the temperature up, it takes the moisture out of the air, so you get less humidity. It tends to be drier in your home. So they make, you know, lovely outdoor plants in the summer, but they very rarely bloom. Even if it's growing, even, you're doing very, very well in the winter.
So should Jill go ahead and put that gardenia plant outside for the summer, and maybe she'll get lucky with some reblooms?
I would say if she's got any possibility, even a terrace in the city that she can put it out on, that would be the best option, and sort of get it a little bit of oomph for to take it over the winter would help a lot.
And it's funny that you talked about, you know, writing a book called Gardenias You've Killed, because actually in The Unexpected Houseplant, you have a great chapter called Love Thwarted. And what plants are in there, and how did they get that designation?
You know, so many people have commented to me that that's their favorite chapter. That, you know, if I've killed it, and I'm a real veteran houseplant grower, then it gives them hope that they, you know,
that it wasn't them.
They don't have brown thumbs. Yes, exactly. But the truth of it is that there are a few plants and they're lovely, lovely things to grow outside in the summer, like abutilons and fuchsias and bougainvilleas. But for various reasons, often insects, that they're kind of insect magnets, I don't find that they grow very well in the home. I did a class, and somebody brought in this stick that it was in the middle of the winter, a stick, and she said, this was her abutilon, flowering maple. And I said, I just looked at it, and I said, that makes you happy? I mean, we grow these things because they're, you know, making us feel good, and if it doesn't, maybe, you know, you might consider sending it elsewhere.
That's a nice way to put it. Well, let's go elsewhere and talk to Barbara in Green Bay next. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. I hear Larry and you talking about your Meyer lemon tree, and I was wondering what I need to know besides what's on the tag, what to, because I would like to buy one. And
sure.
I just want.
And I have to say, I do not have a Meyer lemon, although I am tempted by one. But Tova, what are some of the secrets for growing those citrus trees indoors?
I have a Calamundin, by the way, a Calamundin orange, and it is, everybody who comes by says, I've got to take an orange, I've got to take an orange. And it has plenty for all visitors. So it's a great, it is one of the easier citrus.
Hmm.
What citrus love, they love warmer temperatures, why I can grow one, I don't know, but because my house is quite chilly, but they do seem to do best with a little bit warmer temperatures. They like a lot of light, but they don't need, full sun. East will work for them, or west, but not, try to give them as much light as you possibly can inside. And they do like a lot of fertilizer. They're very hungry plants. So the citrus is one of the few plants that I do fertilize over the winter. The rest of the plants, I give them a break from fertilizing because they're not growing much.
And I know that Larry puts his Bear's Lime tree outside during the summer. In general, do citrus plants like being outside for the summer?
Love it.
And I would think so. That's, warm and humid, which is what we usually get in the summer here in Wisconsin. Seems like it would be exactly the kind of atmosphere that citrus plants would thrive in.
They love it. And then in the fall, when you bring them in, they have those wonderful aromatic flowers. And that's something that a lot of people don't talk about, is the flower part of it, which is really a wonderful perk.
And Cheryl in La Crosse emailed that she has an indoor lime tree, but the fruit falls off before it matures, and so it never gets to ripen. Is there something she can do about that?
I think that's usually light. Without enough light, so again, give it a little bit more light. Be sure, again, because citrus trees tend to be a little bit larger, sure, rotate that plant so that all exposures are getting the light, but usually fruit fall is due to that. Could be lack of humidity, but usually, unless she's got a very small plant and it can't support the fruit yet.
That's an interesting point, too. We're talking with Tova Martin about houseplants and how to care for them when they're staying indoors or going outdoors for warmer weather. She's the author of The Unexpected Houseplant. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in on Garden Talk for Larry Mueller. And let's go next to Suzanne in Muskego. Hi, Suzanne.
Hi. This is a wonderful program, first of all, I wanted to say.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
I'm learning a lot about all the plants I have in my house. I have one particular one that's giving me some trouble. It's a coffee plant. I received it in one of these little terrarium type of a basket about 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And now it is 3 feet tall, and I have over the years, it's beautiful, but over the years I've produced 100 berries at a time off of it, and just to maturity, and had some really good coffee off of it just trying it once.
Wow.
But this year it seems like the stems coming from the main center, they're drying out, and the leaves do not mature. They yellow, brown, and then fall off, and the flowers never get to the point where they open.
Hmm.
So I'm wondering if you could help me.
Now, you're putting it in good light?
In the winter, it's in a southern-facing window.
That's good.
And in the summer, I move it to a little bit more where it's more east and north.
Good, good. Sounds good. Now, is it possible, it sounds like a very unwieldy large tree, you know, bush, is it possible to check the root system?
The last time I transplanted it was about 3 years ago, and it seemed like it was pretty good. But just
you might check it again. It sounds like you might be having some sort of root disease problems in the tree. That's all I can think of because the symptoms that you're describing sound like something that, you know, might be a root system issue. So I suggest that you, if you can possibly get some help and get somebody to help you get it out of the container, check the root system out, make sure it's got nice, white, healthy roots. If it doesn't, take away those old roots and maybe even it, put it back in the same pot or even maybe give it a demotion.
Okay.
So down to a smaller pot.
Yes.
Demotion, huh? Okay. And is there a fertilizer or a soil type that it probably might prefer than what the one I've been, typical garden or potting soil?
I think that they would prefer a slightly acid soil. Usually it's not one of the, you know, biggies on the types of plants that really need an acid soil. But, it's possible if you've had, you know, success in the past with it and been using the same, you know, fertilizer, that's fine. Or, you know, you could just give it a little shot of the fish emulsion, see how that, you know, the organic fertilizer, see how that works if you haven't been working with it. So I find that that's sort of like a, you know, a good neutral fertilizer on it. In general, I find that if a plant is having, you know, serious, yellowing leaves, yes, that's a symptom of lack of fertilizer. But stem problems, et cetera, that usually is not a fertilizer issue. And I don't suggest, like, if somebody goes into the hospital, you don't want to give them a feast at that point.
Yes. Okay.
All right. Well, thanks for that call, Suzanne. And I have to say, I love coffee plants because they have those really dark, glossy leaves. And I am so impressed that Suzanne has actually gotten coffee off her coffee plant.
I'm amazed. Yeah.
It never even occurred to me that that would happen. But that kind of shows what kind of a houseplant caretaker I am. Well, Tova, I'm sure you've heard just about everything over the course of your career. But we have one that might even be a surprise for you. Let's go to Judy in Lodi. Hi, Judy. Tell us about your plant.
Okay, I've got an aloe vera that's never been outside. It weighs about 180 pounds.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, that's the smallest one because I've had them up to 300 pounds. And
wow.
I always have to get somebody to lift them, and I've been giving, when they get so big, I give them to my orthopedic doctor. And she gets flowers off hers. I've never had a flower.
Oh, give them to your chiropractor, right?
Because that's probably the only person that can move it without hurting their back.
You're not kidding, because I have to wear a back brace when I try to even move it. But the leaves are so thick, and I've given all the little plants away. Now I've got about 30 little plants again. I've been raising them for about 40 years.
Wow.
Judy, you need to go into the massive aloe business.
Yeah, I think, I just enjoy giving them away.
Well, Judy, you said that this plant has never been outside before, and you're wondering maybe if it should or could go outside?
Yeah, because the original plant that I had came from the outside from Florida over 40 years ago that my mom gave me, and every year kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So as they got bigger, I would give them to my doctor because she's got an indoor whatever they call it for plants.
Oh, like a greenhouse. Well, I'm wondering, Tova, do you think it's worth Judy wrestling it outside? Or it certainly seems to be doing well right where it is.
You know, I'm a big proponent for leaving well enough alone. Remember, Judy, if you're in Wisconsin there, you're going to have to, that would be one of the first plants to freeze because those leaves are filled with moisture and water. So you would have to bring it in the first threat of a frost, and can you get, you know, enlist all those muscle men
right, that you would need
last minute.
Right. Well, let's try to take one more call before the end of the show from Anne in Port Washington. Hi, Anne.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a Norfolk Island pine tree that this coming Christmas I will have had for 35 years.
Oh, wow.
Not quite as long as Judy did. But it's been badly abused. I was in college at the time. You figure it's gone through this and that. But lately, and it's quite large, lately it has been dropping a lot of, I don't know if you call it the leaves, not the big branches, but the small branches that come off.
Hmm.
The main little needle
branches
type.
Yeah.
And so you're wondering if that's a problem. Tova, what do you think?
They're turning brown and they're dropping.
Yeah, they're turning a much lighter green, looking dry and falling off.
Sounds like a humidity issue to me. Either not watering it enough, and maybe it needs a larger container. Check the root system, or not enough humidity. If it's been in the same place and your humidity, it seems to be the same. Maybe it's not the humidity. It's always hard to diagnose
sure.
things over the phone. But first of all, check the root system. Make sure it isn't very, very pot-bound. I find that they can begin, there's sort of like a point where they will begin to crisp up if you don't water them.
All right, so check the humidity because you certainly don't want to lose that plant that's spent so much of your life with you. Tova Martin, thank you so much for spending time with us on Garden Talk today. The time just flew by.
Well, thank you so much.
And we will certainly talk with you again. Tova Martin is the author of a dozen gardening books, including The Unexpected Houseplant, 220 Extraordinary Choices for Every Spot in Your Home. And you can go to her website, which is tovamartin.com, and Tova is spelled T-O-V-A-H. And we have a link to that on our Facebook page. Don't forget, at 3 o'clock today, tune in for the first pilot episode of Central Time, our new afternoon show co-hosted by Rob Ferret and Veronica Rickard. It covers news, culture, and ideas, and we want to know what you think. So listen in and then find them on Facebook at Central Time on WPR and give them feedback. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. Larry Mueller will be back behind the microphone on Monday. I know he'll be looking forward to talking with you, and I've enjoyed talking with all of you as well. Thanks to Cynthia Schuster for on-air production.